Intrusion Prevention Fundamentals, An Introduction to Network Attack Mitigation with IPS, Chapter 1, Part 3, Attack Examples. Now that you know what the attack characteristics are, you can apply them to any attack to evaluate the threat levels. This section uses several real-world attacks to illustrate the process. Also, each of the attack examples demonstrate an increase in one or more threat levels in comparison to prior attacks. Replacement login. The intent of this attack is to capture user login credentials. It requires that attackers have physical access to mainframe terminals. Attackers use the terminal to replace the login procedure for the computer with their own. The attacker's program masquerades as a standard username and password prompt, but when users enter their credentials, it displays an invalid username or password message. Users think they have simply mistyped something, but the program actually captures the login credentials and stores them somewhere for later retrieval. After the attacker's fake login program runs, the real login prompt appears and the user can log in. There was no real discovery year for this technique. The delivery mechanism can be categorized as physical because you had to physically log into a dumb terminal connected to the mainframe and run your fake login program. The fake login program, however, was not usually very complex because of the dumb terminals supporting only textual displays, unlike the highly graphical nature of current displays. The target was the mainframe, but most accounts had limited privileges. Therefore, the target threat level was low because the effect to the actual mainframe operation was limited. The impact was theft of login credentials, but the accounts usually had limited privileges, and the victim had to log in at the same terminal where your fake login program was running, so the impact was only considered to be in the medium range. The Morris Worm. In 1988, a Cornell University graduate student wrote and released a worm that propagated using the Internet. Between 6,000 and 9,000 Unix-based computers were infected. The worm was not written to cause damage, but to spread to as many systems as possible. Unfortunately, a bug in the worm caused it to infect individual computers many times, resulting in widespread system slowdowns and crashes. Prior to this worm, and for a time after, the most common way to distribute attacks was using media that limited the attack's propagation and reach. The interesting thing about this worm is that it was one of the first distributed using the Internet. It infected systems by exploiting known operating system and application vulnerabilities. After the system was infected, the worm would infect other systems connected to the Internet, which demonstrated how the Internet is a powerful way to propagate attacks. The first worm was launched in 1988 by Robert T. Morris. The delivery mechanism was via the new Internet. Because of the small size of the early Internet, using the Internet as a delivery mechanism was only at medium threat level. The attack was relatively simple because the early Internet had virtually no security measures in place, and it targeted Unix servers that were not extremely critical compared to servers of today, resulting in low threat levels to both of those categories. Even though Morris had no malicious intent, his worm actually took down the Internet at the time. This impact, however, was only a medium level threat because at the time, not that much work was being done on the Internet. A similar disruption today would have a huge economic impact. Viruses, worms, and Trojan horses are all examples of malicious code, and sometimes the terms are used interchangeably. However, there are differences between them. Most of the differences revolve around the infection mechanism. A virus attacks itself to a legitimate program so that when the program is executed, it infects other programs on the system. Usually it is attached to an executable, although in the 1990s, viruses would sometimes attach themselves to documents. Viruses propagate manually when an infected program or document is exchanged. A worm is a subcategory of virus. The primary difference is that it is able to travel from machine to machine without help from a person. It is self-replicating. Trojan horses appear to be useful programs but are actually malicious. Unlike viruses and worms, Trojan horses do not infect other files or self-replicate. CIH, also known as Chernobyl or space filler, was one of the most damaging widely circulated viruses ever. It did not have the capability to self-propagate, but it infected some widely distributed files, such as a firmware update from Yamaha and a game demo from Activision. The payload activated on April 26, 1999. CIH severely damaged a large number of computers by destroying all data on the hard drive and, in some cases, damaging the system BIOS so that the computer could not even be turned on. The CIH virus is notable because it demonstrated malicious code's damage potential. Few viruses, worms, or trojans since CIH have done as much permanent and intentional damage, but the possibility of a future threat that does is still very real. An attack that deletes data and uses the internet to propagate could be terribly damaging. The CIH virus was discovered in 1998. It spread via floppy disks, which is not a very efficient or fast delivery mechanism, so the delivery mechanism is considered a relatively low threat level. CIH targeted personal computers that were beginning to be used for creating important documents and other applications, so the target threat was medium. The impact of the virus was the detection and deletion of system information, making the impact level threat high. By 2000, email had become a commonplace application. The love letter virus, released that year, took advantage of the widespread adoption of email. It consisted of an email message with the worm as an attachment that masqueraded as a love letter. Recipients were encouraged to open the attachment and invoke the virus by the subject of the message, which was, "I love you," and the fact that the sender address was usually one the recipient recognized. Researching the love letter virus, you will find that some people call it a worm and other people call it a virus. Because the user had to open the attachment to infect his machine and launch the love letter program, we're sticking to calling it a virus because it was not truly self-replicating. After a system was infected, the virus sent itself to everyone in the infected system's email contact list. It also initiated a denial of service attack on the official White House website's IP address, damaged important multimedia files on the system, and caused widespread email outages. Love letter caused an estimated $10 billion in economic damages. Love letter was discovered in 2000 and is an ideal example of a drastic leap in threat level. Love letter used Microsoft Outlook Visual Basic commands to perform its operations and incorporated social engineering to trick the user into continuing its spread, giving the complexity a medium threat level. It was delivered using email and the internet. The target systems were personal computers that were still only moderately important to business operation, so the target threat level can be considered a medium level. At the time, email use was becoming widespread, but it had not achieved the business reliance that it has today. So the delivery mechanism of email is considered only a medium threat, especially because the user had to actually open the attachment. The impact of the virus, however, was a threat level of high. Not only did the virus impact the operation of personal computers, but it also slowed down entire networks and severely impacted the operation of the mail servers themselves, making love letter multifaceted and very dangerous. NIMDA. Prior to the NIMDA word, most malicious code traveled from system to system using just one or two methods. Love letter, for example, propagated only using email and file infection. NIMDA, which is admin spelled backwards, used many propagation vectors. It infected local files, infected files via peer-to-peer file shares, attached itself to emails, and used a vulnerability to infect Microsoft web servers. Although it didn't delete data, NIMDA's complexity and variety of delivery mechanisms made it very difficult to stop. Also, it compromised the security settings of any infected host by giving anyone with network access full access to the hard drive. It was one of the first worms to rate a high threat level in every category. NIMDA was discovered in 2001 and incorporated multiple delivery mechanisms, giving it a high delivery threat level. NIMDA was also very complex. It was the first virus worm to actually infect other files, as opposed to just making multiple copies of itself. making removal more complicated, giving it a high complexity threat level. By 2001, personal computers and network connectivity had become a much more vital component to enhance the productivity of workers. Causing computers to crash or preventing network access now had significant business impact, giving NIMDA the threat level of high. SQL Slammer. Slammer propagated with unprecedented speed. It attacked Microsoft database servers and was delivered via the internet. After a server was infected, it didn't take long for the worm to infect all the other servers it could reach. In fact, it infected most of its estimated 75,000 victims within the first 10 minutes. Another important characteristic of the Slammer worm is that it targeted a service that for many companies is mission critical. Databases oftentimes store the most valuable and frequently used data a company has. If they are not available for any reason and access to the data is lost, the company can lose a tremendous amount of money. When Slammer hit, its propagation could have been halted by turning off all the databases it targeted. Because of the mission-critical nature of the service, most organizations could not afford to do that. Any time an attack targets required services, such as databases or network authentication, it is very difficult for organizations to arrest its propagation because doing so would deprive the users of a service they must have in order to do their jobs. Not being able to prevent the spread of SQL Slammer is a classic example of how business needs often override security concerns in many situations. In this situation, blocking SQL traffic at network routers would have had a much more damaging impact on the network than allowing the SQL Slammer worm to spread until all the systems could have been patched. Slammer was discovered in 2003 and was delivered using the internet, but it targeted a buffer overflow in Microsoft SQL servers. Exploiting a buffer overflow is not very complicated, so the SQL Slammer's complexity is in the low threat range. The delivery used the internet, but because most SQL servers are protected from direct internet access, the delivery level is only medium. The target of SQL Slammer was database servers. These systems are critical to business operations, so the target level is high. Another side effect was that thousands and thousands of client systems were compromised because these systems had a simple SQL Server program, Microsoft SQL Server 2000 desktop engine running on them by default, unknown to most users of the client systems. Compromise of the client systems also led to the compromise of more server systems, because the client system had access to the internal SQL servers, which were protected from direct internet access. A buffer overflow vulnerability results when an application does not perform sufficient bounds checking on input data. If a program tries to place too much data into a memory buffer, the program will usually try to access an illegal memory location, causing the program to crash. By carefully crafting the input data, an attacker can sometimes cause the unchecked input data to overwrite the program stack so that the code of his choosing is executed on the targeted system, allowing the attacker to gain control of the system. This concludes Part 3. Please download Part 4 if you have not done so already.